Welcome to the Forest Grove United Church of Christ podcast. I'm Philip Dungan, and with my co-host, Pastor Brendan Curran, we thank you for joining us on this remarkable journey of faith, love, and acceptance. At Forest Grove United Church of Christ, we believe in creating a sanctuary where diversity is celebrated and every person is embraced just as they are. We are proud to be an open and affirming faith community committed to fostering a safe and inclusive space for all. In today's podcast, we'll explore the beauty of being an open and affirming faith community and how it transforms lives. Let's listen in. Welcome back to the Forest Grove United Church of Christ podcast. I'm Philip Dungan, and I'm joined today by Pastor Brendan Curran, the pastor of Forest Grove United Church of Christ. Today, though, we wanted to discuss what does it mean for a church or a faith community to be open and affirming? At Forest Grove United Church of Christ, we say that, I believe, on a weekly basis at church, that we are open and affirming. So we wanted to look at what that really means as a faith community. So Pastor Brendan, what does that mean, being open and affirming?
Well, I'm glad to be talking and having this conversation during Pride Month. Open and Affirming Sunday falls on during the month of June on the United Church of Christ calendar, because we are indeed an open and affirming church. I'll say a little bit more about what open and affirming means. There are plenty of churches out there that will say, you know, we welcome you, but they'll say we welcome you, but treat people as second class. For instance, we welcome you, but we are going to be praying the gender diversity or the gayness away, for instance.
Right.
that's not how we hold welcome. That's not how we understand welcome in the United Church of Christ. In the UCC, it's the perspective and the stance of being open and affirming that simply welcoming people in spite of differences is not what Jesus taught. Jesus saw and loved people for who they were and placed himself alongside them in the work of liberation. And Jesus said, whoever welcomes the little ones, welcome him. And I want to say a little bit more about the little ones later. But for now, I'll just say we understand the call of the gospel is not merely to inclusion, but to solidarity. And so Jesus welcomed both, for instance, the Pharisees, the privileged, the included, and also the so-called little ones. But to the little ones, he gave priority. He gave water and stood by them. And he welcomed the Pharisees by inviting them to embrace those they were shutting out of their hearts. Inviting them to abandon their views that rendered certain groups less than human. So in our faith tradition, God doesn't place God's self above humanity and patronizingly declare they accepted humanity and welcomed us in spite of our differences. God joins us. We see this picture of the divine joining us in our faith tradition, in the fullness of our humanity, in equal relationship with us, or in reciprocal relationship with us. And so we see the embracing of diversity in the way that Jesus did, and actually an expression of our faith in God. For instance, it's not enough to just say we welcome LGBTQ people, but rather we need to be learning what it means to dismantle homophobia and transphobia. It's not enough to say we're this in the same way how it's not enough to just say we're not racist, but rather as an expression of our faith, we are making the effort to become actively anti-racist and change systems that dehumanize. Our faith invites us to ask the question, how do we stand next to those having walls built to keep them out? You know, our society has its own long list of others, the same way Jesus's society did. And the gospel calls us to place ourselves alongside those who've been walled out, not to save them, but to be saved ourselves, not to bestow some truth, but to learn from each other's truth. That's what we're celebrating when on our church calendar, we celebrate Open and Affirming Sunday during Pride Month, which of course is originally a commemoration of the Stonewall Uprising in New York City, which And that marked the beginning, really, of the modern LGBTQ movement for justice, rights, and liberation.
And really, it's more than just for LGBTQ, though, correct? Doesn't it also have to do with marginalized communities, whether it's race, gender?
The open and affirming movement in the UCC did start as an effort to be open and affirming towards LGBTQ people. Over the years, the conversation that it started expanded, I believe, or I observe, to an effort and a conversation about how we work to actively and aspirationally be in solidarity with those who have historically been marginalized or oppressed by the church, and in some cases continue to be.
Yeah, it definitely seems like it is at least a philosophy that would embrace not just one essence of marginalization, but perhaps several, even though, like you said, it started with the LGBTQ community in particular. I mean, we talked about the concept of open and affirming as a community, but what does it mean for us, our specific church community? How do you see it played out?
Well, I think what it means is LGBTQ people can come and participate in every aspect of the life and ministry of the church. The love that people share between one another is celebrated and honored. I think that it was interesting. Just this past week, I came to the church from Rhode Island, and I saw there's a church in downtown Providence called the First Baptist Church in America. It is indeed the First Baptist Church in America. And their billboard said that God is non-binary. And there are theological and biblical arguments that can be made for that, because
sure.
throughout the Bible, there are all different pronouns used for the divine. There are other than human references for the divine. The divine is bigger than the images of ourselves that we project onto the divine. And yet throughout history, we do see that very often we've been presented with the male image of the divine. And, you know, in the prevailing theological understanding in UCC churches that I think has been fostered by the open and affirming movement is an expanded understanding of the divine embodied in all persons, in every expression. And that includes all expression that makes us fully human. That includes gender diversity and sexual diversity. You know, how boring would it be if there were only one note? There would be no symphonies. Can you imagine if there were only one plant or flower? We'd have no gardens or forests or oxygen or medicines or food or beauty. How desperately lonely would we all become without the animals, without the mesmerizing variety of species and the wisdom they all bring? In our churches, I feel we have the understanding of the divine expressed in and through that symphony. So when people bring their whole self to church, and they're the full expression of who they are, we applaud them, we celebrate them. Welcoming that symphony is a matter of our survival as well as our spiritual salvation too, I think, because we're here together after all.
Right, absolutely. Well, in the So I guess that kind of brings me up to my next question. Are there LGBTQ people who show up in the Bible?
To talk about LGBTQ people in the Bible, it's hard to talk about LGBTQ people in the Bible and the way LGBTQ people are affirmed in the Bible without first acknowledging the way the Bible and theology has been weaponized against LGBTQ people. You know, for instance, very commonly for such a long time, the sin of Sodom was considered homosexuality, for instance. And are you familiar with that yourself?
Yes, yeah, the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, where it
Yeah.
kind of originated and
Well, biblical scholars have, I think that when we engage the Bible, it's important to consider what is the Bible. We have to ask, what is the Bible? And then we also have to engage the question, through what interpretive lens are we reading the Bible? And with what intention? And with what understanding of God? Because, of course, the Bible is not God. The Bible is a collection of books that tells the story of how people have related to and tried to understand God and locate the way the divine moves in the lives of humanity over the course of hundreds of years through oral tradition and written records and myth and metaphor and possibility and all of those things swirled together. So to engage the Bible as a way of being in dialogue and reaching and identifying and understanding with the divine, engaging the Bible to be in relationship with the divine is a spiritual practice in and of itself. And so these are important questions to ask whenever we use the Bible to shed light on our lives today as LGBTQ people or otherwise. But we've certainly seen how the Bible has been used to, I would say, to harm LGBTQ people. And first and foremost, I would want to say that, in probably all cases, modern biblical scholarship has demonstrated that the ways the Bible has been used to harm LGBTQ people is poor scholarship. For instance, the sin of Sodom is oftentimes arbitrarily called homosexuality, but you can flip to the pages of the prophet Ezekiel and come to Ezekiel 16, verse 49, which says quite bluntly, this was the sin of Sodom. They didn't help the poor and needy.
Wow.
So, right. So, I mean, defining the sin of Sodom and Gomorrah in the Bible as homosexuality really is a projection of the Christian coalition in the 1980s, which was really more a right-wing political organization than a church.
Yes, with definitely a definite political agenda and a
And
target.
actually, I want to say a little bit more about how the Bible is weaponized. This might not sit well with some of our listeners, but religion is a tool to have a spiritual experience. Religion and spirituality and the community we build up around religions and spirituality is a community of meaning making, and I think should rightly act as the moral conscience to a society. So I'm really not against drawing socio-political conclusions from our faith. I think it's problematic when the conclusions that we make, the theological or biblical conclusions that we make, are limiting and dehumanizing rather than liberating.
Correct.
And so I think that's what we it's important to pay attention to those things. There are a few examples of LGBTQ biblical scholars, or I've noticed LGBTQ people in the church often want to point to characters in the Bible like Ruth and Naomi, who have this deep love and commitment to each other. The famous passage, wherever thou go, I goest, your people will be my people, and my God will be your God. We hear that between Ruth and Naomi. There's also John, the beloved disciple, and Christ. LGBTQ people will often point to these deep connections and imagine intimacy between those people. between Jesus and the beloved disciple, I'm not against imagining the idea of Jesus being intimate. I think it's actually quite beautiful if we believe in Jesus as a metaphor for the full humanity of the divine, then certainly full humanity includes intimacy and connection. But I will also say that there, with regard to Ruth and Naomi being a pair, or for instance, Jesus and John, the beloved disciple, being close, there's nothing in the Bible that explicitly states that. However, I think it's an example of how people, through their own social location, will imagine themselves into the text, which is actually a practice of Ignatian spirituality. I think that there's a 10-cent word called hermeneutic, which is an interpretive lens with which we use to interpret the Bible. And actually the queer theologian Marcella Althaus Reed talks about the hermeneutic of imagination, because what we would call LGBTQ people now did exist in the biblical world. Oftentimes marginalized groups today, because, you know, the Bible was written under patriarchy and right, by men. Oftentimes women and LGBTQ people are in the position of having to imagine themselves into the text, and also mine the silent spaces of the text for meaning. And I actually think there's wisdom and beauty in that. And it's, I suppose it's threatening if we're engaging the Bible as if it's a one-dimensional text with a surface level literal meaning. But that's not what the Bible is. And that's also not the purpose of the Bible. Speaking for myself, the Bible is the cradle that points to Christ, which is universal love embodied in the human heart. And so that is what I'm looking for when I read the Bible.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with, at least in my opinion, there's nothing wrong. Like if somebody reads the story of Ruth and Naomi and they look at it as this beautiful story of a mother and a daughter, even though they weren't related except for by marriage, and that's how they interpret it, there's nothing wrong with that. But would there, likewise, there's nothing wrong with interpreting that maybe it was a little different sort of relationship, and that was actual, you know, affection and kind of,
I don't think we need to project sexuality onto relationships or in the Bible for them to be meaningful. And exactly. I think there are more powerful and meaningful scriptural references that support our solidarity with LGBTQ people. I think that there are examples where LGBTQ people are explicitly referenced in the Bible in an affirming way. And so I'd like to talk a little bit more about some of those examples.
Yeah, that would be great.
In Matthew 18, for instance, Jesus is asked who is greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And he calls a child forward and said, "Truly, I tell you, unless you change and become like the children, you'll never enter the kingdom of heaven. And whoever becomes humble like this child is greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me." When Jesus talks about welcoming the children, the so-called little ones, he's explaining that when we widen the circle of our heart's capacity to love, to embrace those who've been left out or pushed out, we welcome the presence of God and enter the life of the divine. He expresses in this passage how life builds on life. So when we welcome Christ as a compassionate embrace, we actually extend it to each other. And the supremacy ideology that dehumanizes any person or group denies that embrace. any ideology or perspective, I think, that asserts one identity, one perspective, one religion, one language, one life form, one sexuality, one gender, one color, as being the best above all others, walls out Christ. When we hear that Jesus talk about the children, something we often miss and forget is how in the Greco-Roman world, children were not considered fully human. And as a result, we're often ill-treated, but in the gospel we hear this morning, we see Jesus aligning himself with the children, with the little ones. So Jesus is shown in this passage rejecting any ideology that places one person or group above others, and any perspective that excludes and diminishes the humanity of another, and demonstrating a call to place ourselves in solidarity with the little ones. So when he talks about welcoming the children, welcoming the little ones, Jesus is, in this divine wisdom, is inviting us to place ourselves in equal reciprocal relationship, especially with those rendered others. Jesus was always placing himself alongside those who had been othered, children, women, the elderly, the sick, and also among various outgroups, including the group. And this is where it gets really interesting in terms of LGBTQ biblical scholarship, eunuchs. We might sort of cringe at the term right. Today, but I want to talk about eunuchs for a minute. We know eunuchs were another group of othered people, another group of so-called little ones embraced by Jesus. The idea of the LGBTQ community as it exists today really did not exist in the Greco-Roman world, but it has been argued by modern biblical scholars like Robert Goss that they would have been referred to as eunuchs. In his book, Our Families, Our Values, Snapshots of Queer Kinship, he writes about eunuchs in Jesus's time, saying they were viewed as, quote, being of ambiguous gender in the Greek and Roman worlds. Although situations differed, it's clear that eunuchs fell within the sexual category that we would today broadly call transgendered, and many would be considered transsexual. He goes, and that's from his book, Robert Goss goes on to explain how others have said the term was also used as slang for men who refused to marry women and did not have children, giving references to eunuchs in the Bible special meaning for gay men as well. So this understanding of the meaning of the term eunuch in the Greco-Roman Empire, of which Jerusalem was a part, illuminates on the presence of LGBTQ people in the Bible. Later in the Gospel of Matthew, I was just talking about Matthew 18, in the verse right after the chapter that I shared in 19, verse 12, referring to the eunuchs, Jesus said, "For there are eunuchs who have been so from birth, and there are eunuchs who have been made eunuchs by others, and there are eunuchs who have made themselves eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom of heaven." Then he says, "Let anyone accept this who can." So if we were to update the language to the terms we would use today, I mean, Jesus is basically saying they're here, they're queer, get used to it.
Right. Well, it's such a powerful statement, because all of these marginalized peoples, you know, there was this kind of sense that Jesus was re-dignifying them, because society had put them with labels, whether it was a child, whether it was a quote unquote eunuch, whether it was a leper, whether it was a woman. He redignified them. And I think Right. That's so powerful.
Right. And so the work of faith community, Christian or otherwise, any spiritual community that embraces a transcendent vision and a higher consciousness that we would call God, really, you would think that the expression of that relationship or belief would be rehumanizing where there has been dehumanization. And So I think being open and affirming is a way we try to practice that. I also want to talk, we hear about eunuchs in Acts chapter 8. The book of Acts chapter 8 gives the account of the first Gentile convert to Christianity and describes him as an Ethiopian eunuch making a strong argument for the possibility that the first Gentile to convert to Christianity was a gay or transgendered black man. So the gospel doesn't simply tell us we should, quote, accept difference in spite of difference. The gospel reveals the very life of Christ as this ever-widening embrace, as the coming into healed, whole, reciprocal relationships with all those pushed outside the embrace by oppressors. And the gospel tells us that LGBTQ people are among the little ones that Jesus talks about, who walk with the power and the solidarity of God. So it's painful. As someone who has that, I have a lot of love for God, and I believe that the faith in God is an embrace, a call to humanity, to a higher consciousness and a higher calling. And it's sad to see the way so many project their own discomfort, their own bigotry, onto an eternal concept. It's good to be able to offer different perspective. And unfortunately, we don't often hear these different perspectives in dominant church discourse. I suppose we do if we're in the UCC, but in the larger conversation of Christianity, I think a lot of this might be new to many.
I think it is a lot of church. I mean, even in my own personal church history, you know, if the idea of gayness or LGBTQ community was even broached, it usually was very negative.
And I guess, and certainly growing up in Catholic school with regard to gay people, something I heard all the time was this very patronizing expression, love the sinner, hate the sin.
Correct.
The irony is, now as an adult, I don't have a problem with the term love the sinner, hate the sin, but I think the only sin is hating people for no reason, or dehumanizing others, or not seeing the beauty of the great chorus of life, and not seeing the beauty of God expressed in all persons. You know, the image of God is not at war with herself, with themselves.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite platform so you don't miss an episode. You can find more information about Forest Grove United Church of Christ at www.fgucc.org or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or TikTok. We'd love to hear what you think about the show, so please email us at podcast@fgucc.org with your thoughts, questions, or suggestions for upcoming podcasts. Until next time.